It's the Sunday Showcase on the Mutual Audio Network.
The following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance recommended.
Penny and I are home alone and the wind has been howling lately, so I guess that means it's time for Tuesday Terror's addition to Mutual Presents. We're back with this double feature from The Mysterious Traveler, Death Comes for Adolf Hitler, and Murder Goes Free. Now let's just wind back our clocks under our blankets for this one, shall we?
The Mysterious Traveler.
This is the Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can. For tonight, we're going on the strangest journey we've taken yet. We're going down into the dark and fearsome depths of the sea to watch fate settle her account with the archenemy of mankind in a story I call Death Comes for Adolf Hitler. My story begins in the radio room of the American destroyer Spindrift on patrol duty somewhere in the Atlantic. It is late at night. Chief radio man Mike Williams, headphones over his ears, is checking on the dozens of messages whispering through the ether. Beside Mike, his relief man Joe Norman is sitting back with his feet up, working a crossword puzzle and mournfully humming to himself.
Now show me the way to go home. All the time I want to go to bed. A little quiet
love. Joe, cut it.
Huh? What is it, Mike?
Cut it, Joe, cut it. I'm getting something. You can just barely hear it.
Something's right, Joe?
Shh, wait. I'm getting it stronger now. There, it's clearer. Holy cow.
Yeah, what is it?
It's a German sub. On the bottom and calling for help.
Ain't that something? Shall I notify the skipper?
No, nothing we can do. Must be hundreds of miles away. Get a pencil, though, and put on those headphones. They'll take down the message, whatever it is.
Okay, I got a pencil here. Is that the phone? Is that it? Are you kidding me? I can't hear a thing.
Of course I'm not kidding. I tell you, I had it just now, then it faded out. Wait a minute. It's coming back in again.
Hello? Hello? This is Oberleutnant from Reiner, the Unterseeboot Wolf. Listen to me. Anybody who may be picking up this message, please listen to me. There's nothing anybody can do to help us, but please listen anyway. Makes it easier if I can talk, easier to face what is coming. Because we are doomed. We know it. Only yesterday afternoon, as we were cruising on the surface, recharging our batteries, we thought our mission was as good as accomplished. I was up on the conning tower with Captain Metz. With us was our passenger, our very special passenger who called himself Herr Schmidt. Of course, that was not his name, and we all know who he was.
A beautiful day, Herr Captain. Particularly gratifying after our long submersion.
Yes, Your Excellency. Pardon me, Herr Schmidt. But we could take no chances on surfacing until we were safely past the area of Allied patrol.
Of course not, Captain Metz. You must not take the slightest risk, as long as I am aboard.
I am aware of that. Do not worry. You will reach your destination safely. I estimate that tomorrow midnight we will take our contact with the South American coast. And our journey will be over.
Good. Understand, Herr Captain? No word of this trip must ever be breathed to the world, or yourself, or any other member of your crew.
It is understood. You may rest assured. My crew is well trained.
The world must not know or guess that back in the fatherland, this is a double who rules. We have lost, But I say yet please.
It would be disloyal of me to believe anything else, Herr Schmidt.
South America, he will make my plan. The world will think me dead. Suicide. On the day Germany falls. But instead, I will be safely hidden. So I can direct our rebirth.
Quite so.
Our enemies will yet feel the might of my vengeance. I will return to lead my people to victory. However long it may take.
Of course, Herr Schmidt.
Lifeboat, 3 points off the starboard bow. Lifeboat, 3 points to starboard.
Pitching and tossing on the waves ahead of us was a lifeboat. Crowded at the gaunt-faced, bearded men who watched us pull alongside with hostile eyes. A dozen yards from them, Captain Metz ordered the engine to stop. And then as our passenger looked on, his cloak pulled up to conceal his face, Captain Metz questioned the men in the lifeboat.
You're in the lifeboat. Who is in charge?
I am, bless your eyes.
What is your name? What ship? What cargo did you carry? What port were you cleared for?
Captain Peter Jensen of the Norton. Knowledge of your service. We were a relief ship carrying food and medical supplies to Greece when one of your murdering undersea dogs torpedoed us.
That is all, Captain Jensen. You may pull away now. The nearest land is 300 miles due west of you.
I will pull away. Pull, men. Let's get where we can breathe air not contaminated by this scum.
And then, just as the lifeboat started to pull away, the wind unexpectedly whipped aside the cloak that our passenger was using to conceal his face. And in the lifeboat, Captain Peter Jensen, a burly giant of a man, recognized him.
Men, stop! Stop! You see that slinking rat in the ship of a man trying to hide his face?
Yeah,
you know who that is?
No, no.
Take a good look at him so you can tell your children you've seen the murderer of mankind himself. The archdevil who really gave the orders that sent our comrades to the bottom.
I fear you have been recognized, Herr Schmidt.
Stop them! Turn your guns on them! Destroy their boat, Herr Commandant! No one must leave the report having seen me!
Very well, Herr Schmidt. Forward gun, prepare to fire.
Forward gun, ready to fire.
Give them 2 arms. Forward gun, fire.
Forward gun, fire.
You filthy murdering dogs. So you're going to murder us too. You there on the bridge, listen to me. Every one of us will be waiting for you when your time comes. All of us, the you hounds and jackals and murderers, we'll be waiting for you, every one of us. We'll be waiting for you, and someday we'll get you. Remember that. Someday we'll get you.
Fire!
They are gone? Yes, we have finished them. There will be no eyewitnesses to tell of seeing you aboard a submarine in these waters, Herr Schmidt.
That is good. Berg, never know. That I had left Germany. But never guess. The whole future. The fatherland. What is that sound?
Bomber. Patrol bomber coming this way.
Get below us, Hans. We are going to submerge.
We made a crash dive into the depths of the ocean. A few bombs exploded, but far away. Patrol planes were too late. Captain Metz gave the necessary orders while our illustrious passenger looked on, his face pale, drops of sweat on his brow.
What is our depth now, Muller?
75 feet, sir.
Good. Then we should...
The pump! They're coming closer!
No, they have lost us. They are bombing at random now. Yes. We are safe now. Depth, Muller.
90 feet, sir.
90 is good enough. Level her.
Level her, sir.
We will take course 180 and... Level her, I said. We are still making a 5-degree dive.
The leveling planes do not respond, sir.
We are damaged! The bombs have damaged
us! Impossible. Not one of those bombs was close enough to break an egg. Muller, our depth.
100 feet, sir.
Lieutenant Reiner, order half speed ahead.
Half speed ahead?
The ship to hand operation of the diving plane.
Hand operation of the diving plane, sir.
Now level her.
Level her, sir.
Well, what's the matter?
Captain, the operating wheel.
Your turn.
Hey, that
diving planes must be jammed, sir.
Oh, that is all.
Captain Mitch, I demand that you hide to the surface. Something is wrong.
Am I safe? I am captain of this vessel, and I am giving the order. Hey, well, our leveling planes are jammed. We will surface and clear them. Miller, step.
120 feet, sir.
Stop there, sir.
Load the forward ballast tanks.
Load the forward ballast tanks, sir.
Now our bow is coming up. We are leveling off, sir. Hold on, as she is.
Hold on, as she is, sir.
Muller.
Yeah, Muller.
How fast are we going up?
We are not rising at all, sir.
Not rising?
No.
With the motors off, we must be.
We should be. But we are still descending at about 20 feet a minute, Captain.
Captain, I demand to know what's wrong. I order you, take me to the surface.
I am just as interested in reaching the surface as you are, Herr Schmidt. Blow the main ballast tank until we start to rise.
Blow the main ballast tank until we start to rise.
For 1 hour, his struggles to reach the surface, but without success. He still continued paddling to the bottom. It was unreal. Unbelievable, impossible. The crew stared at each other. Then a big fish loud. Our illustrious passenger raved and ranted at Captain Mitz, screeching about his safety until Mitz ordered him to escape another pig of being dragged there. We continued with our efforts to raise the submarine to the surface until abruptly Seaman Muller cried a warning.
Captain Mitz, there are destroyers aboard.
Destroyers?
Two of them. I just picked them up on the phone. Seem to be circling us.
Silence the motors. Stop all pumps. The square, eh? Lieutenant Reiner.
Yes, sir?
What depth does the chart show?
Depth? 50 fathoms with gravel bottom, sir. But there's a fault in the ocean bed just east of our position. A crevice, 1,000 feet deep, sir.
We are safely beyond that. Muller, our depth?
200 feet, sir.
Our rate of descent?
10 feet a minute, sir.
But our main tanks are empty, sir. We should be going up, not down.
Nevertheless, we are going down. And as long as we are, we will bottom and lie quiet until the destroyers leave. Then we will surface for repairs. Muller.
Yes.
What are the destroyers doing?
They seem to be still circling, sir. Perhaps they are trying to pick us up on their detectors.
We must see that they fail. Our depth?
220 feet, sir. It's almost as if...
As if what?
Nothing, sir.
Go on. As if what?
Excuse me, sir. I was going to say as if something was pulling us down.
Ah, but you thought better of saying it.
Yeah.
See that you continue to think better of such remarks. The same applies to everyone on board. Lieutenant Reiner.
Yes, sir.
We will bottom in exactly 7 minutes. Prepare to make an inspection of the ship when we do.
I have finished the inspection, sir.
And your report?
Everything is in perfect order, sir. There are no leaks. The batteries are fully charged. All motors in working order. All pumps operating.
Then, obviously, there's no reason why, when we choose to surface, we should not do so.
No, sir.
Muller, what about the bloodhounds who are trying to sniff us out on the surface? Those destroyers.
I have heard no propeller sound for 20 minutes, sir.
Then we will surface. Load the auxiliary tank.
Load the auxiliary tank, sir.
All tanks empty,
sir.
All tanks empty? Captain, your pardon, do you hear? They have blown all our tanks and we have not risen at all.
I am well aware of it, Lieutenant Reiner. You take me for an imbecile?
No, sir. Of course not, sir. It is thought that it is impossible, sir.
Since it is so, it must be possible. Obviously, we are stuck in a mud bottom.
But the bottom here is gravel, sir. The chart says so.
The chart is wrong. I say it is mud, do you hear?
Yes, sir. Mud, sir.
And so we shall have to use our motors to pull ourselves free. Signal full speed ahead.
Yes, sir. Full speed ahead. They are not moving, sir.
Now what is it? Why have the fools cut the motors?
Excuse me, sir. Engine room reporting.
Yes. What is it?
Well, what have the idiots to say for themselves?
They say the propeller is fouled.
Fouled? How could it be fouled?
It is impossible for it to have become fouled on this bottom.
Yes, sir. They say it is not entirely fouled. It will turn, but only very slowly.
As if what?
Well, sir, they say it turns as if something were holding it, trying to keep it from revolving.
The fools.
When we get back to our base, I shall court-martial every man aboard.
Perhaps the propeller is tangled with some seaweed. That is all. In that case, we may be able to avert some sweep.
Full speed astern.
Full speed astern.
Well, now what?
Your pardon. The engine room reports the propeller is still fouled, sir. It behaves as it did before. It turns, but as if something is holding it back.
And to think that I, Hans Ludwig von Metz, thought I had the finest submarine crew in the world. A brainless pack of idiots who become stuck in the mud on the bottom and they go to pieces like old women. Now listen to me, all of you. The next man who shows...
Captain Metz.
Ah, Herr Schmidt. I trust you have not been lying. Everything is quite under control.
In my captain, I've been hearing sounds from outside the submarine.
Sounds? What kind of sounds?
Scratching sounds, tappings on the metal. It sounded as if someone is trying to get into the submarine.
My dear Herr Schmidt, you had nothing except the noises made perhaps by pebbles being swept against our sides by the current. That is all.
But I tell you, it sounds like hands rapping and tapping, scraping at the hull, trying to get in. Why are we staying down here in the bottom? Serve it at once, you hear me? I order you, serve it at once.
That, Your Excellencies, what I am about to do. Now, all respect, may I suggest that you return to your cabin. Your presence here may impede our efforts.
Very well, Captain. But see that you take me to the surface at once.
Have no fear. Lieutenant Reiner, perhaps you will assist Herr Schmidt to his cabin.
Yes, sir. Certainly. If I may open the door for your exit.
Captain Mitch.
Well, what is it?
Captain, we hear them too. Sounds. Sounds coming from outside our hull.
I hear no sounds.
Captain, I can hear them now. Quite plainly, on my detector phones. It's not possible to identify them, but they sound as if many people were climbing up our sides and...
There. Perhaps that will bring you to your senses. Listen to me, all of you. Temporarily, we are stuck in the mud. The current is sweeping debris or pebbles against us. You are all acting like children who think they see a ghost in a graveyard. In an hour, we shall be on the surface. You have my word for it. To get free from the mud, I shall fill the bow tanks, then blow them and fill the stern tanks. We shall seesaw ourselves loose. Do you all understand my scheme?
Yes, Captain.
Very good. Flood the forward ballast tanks.
Flood the forward ballast tanks, sir.
Captain Metz.
Yes, Lieutenant Reiner.
The main pumps are again operating, sir. The failure was caused by Hans Jäger.
Jäger?
How? He went crazy, committed suicide by grabbing the poles of the main switch. The short circuit electrocuted him, blew out the fuses.
Nah, Jäger was always a fool. How the others reacted to his death?
Very badly, sir. They are very nervous.
Nervous, are they?
Yes, sir. That scraping and scratching outside our hull has affected them, sir. It has stopped for now, but the crew says that it's just because they are planning something else.
They? Who do you mean by they?
The crew says, sir, that there are hundreds of men in the water outside trying to get in at us. Dead men, sir.
Lieutenant Reiner, do you wish me to place you under arrest?
No, sir. I'm just trying to explain the state of the mind of the crew, sir. In spite of all our efforts, they are still on the bottom and the men are getting very jumpy, sir.
I shall have to teach them a lesson they will not forget. They are taking their cue from our illustrious passenger, of course. If he had not come out here with his ranting and raving... Never mind that. He's quiet now. They gave him whiskey with a sedative in it.
Your pardon, Captain. If I may make a suggestion.
Well, what is it?
There is one thing we have not tried.
Huh?
They have to try it, sir. Discharge our torpedoes.
Discharge our torpedoes? A submarine without torpedoes, Lieutenant, is no more use than an airplane without wings.
But we must, sir. We have 10 torpedoes aboard. 25,000 pounds of dead weight. Get rid of that, and we have to rise. We have to.
I see you are beginning to share the hysteria of the crew. When we return to our base, I shall not fail to include that fact in my report. However, I accept your suggestion. Order the discharge of our torpedoes to begin at once.
Yes, sir. At once.
It's no use.
We are going down, Adop. Down.
Yeah. What's going on here? Your man mumbling about. Why did not discharge the last of the torpedoes?
You know what is going on here, Herr Leutnant. We have fired 6 torpedoes to lighten ship, and what has happened? We are sinking deeper.
He is right.
Yes, we are going deeper. Our fleet will not stand it. We shall be crushed, drowned like rats in a trap.
We are not going deeper. We have come to a stop already. Even if we should slide a little further, we still have a margin of safety of at least 100 feet. The very fact we have moved proves we are breaking free from the mud.
No, it is not true. We are not stuck in the mud. We are not.
Batman! No more of that.
No more of that. Why should I? Be quiet. We all know we are not in any mud. We all know our tanks are empty and we should have been on the surface long ago. We all know why our propellers will not turn, and we all know why we cannot rise through.
Batman!
Because we are being held down. We are being held down by 1,000 dead men who are crawling all over us, scratching at our plates, trying to get in. They have come from all over the seven seas just to hold us down, just to see we do not get away. Listen to them. Listen. You can hear them now. Listen.
Ah, what nonsense. Far from coming to your senses. It's only our plates groaning under pressure.
That is not true. You know better. We all know better. Who dragged us down here to the bottom? Whose hands are keeping our propellers from turning? Whose bodies jammed our diving planes? Whose weight is keeping us on the bottom? The dead.
Rossman, I order you to be quiet.
It is too late for orders. There is only one way we can escape. That is to give the ones outside the man they want. They want our passenger, the one who calls himself Herr Schmidt. We all know who he is, and so do they. And they have come to get him.
Rossman, you are under arrest.
Listen, listen, all of you. Let us get this Herr Schmidt with his funny mustache. Put him in a torpedo tube and send him out to the deck, outside. Let them have him. Then they will let us go free. It is our only hope.
Helen! Hartman.
Captain Ness.
I heard your interesting little speech just now. And this is my answer. Does anyone else want the same medicine to bring him to his senses? Then to your stations. Lieutenant Reiner, continue to discharge our torpedoes.
That was 4 hours ago. We have discharged all our torpedoes, and we are still on the bottom. Every few minutes, we slip a little closer to the 1,000-foot chasm in the seabed. Very soon, inevitably, we will slip over the edge right into it. The whole submarine is filled with a great rustling and scratching, as though thousands of hands were clawing at it, tugging at it, pulling it toward that chasm. The crew truly believes that we are being slowly but surely dragged toward it by the dead, by the thousands of dead who have gathered outside, drawn here by the hatred for our passenger. A hatred which is so great even death cannot quench it. Perhaps they are right. Certainly our passenger believes it himself. He's in the next cabin. Captain Metz has locked him in. Perhaps if I hold his microphone into which I'm speaking close to the bulkhead, you can hear him.
Captain Metz! something. They are all trying. They're drilling at the border of the enemy. Captain, I order you to save me. I order you to. You must. You cannot let me die.
Oh, that is enough, enough. It makes an unlovely spectacle our death as death approaches. As for me, I have locked myself in the radio room here after sending the radio men away. Though no one can save us, there is still some comfort in knowing that somewhere some human ear is hearing me. At least I do not feel so much alone down here at the bottom of the sea. Another lurch, then. It is truly as if hands, many hands, were remorselessly pulling us towards our doom.
Enemy Adolf Hitler? I do not know, so I cannot tell you. The man who told it to me, perhaps he was joking, you can say. You must make up your own mind. But it is interesting to think about. Yes, very interesting. It reminds me of another strange story I heard recently. Oh, you're getting off at the next stop. I'm sorry. But perhaps we'll meet again soon. I take this same train every week at this time.
You have just heard Chapter 66 of The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. In tonight's story, Death Comes for Adolf Hitler, Tony Barrett played Lieutenant Reiner, Philip Clark played Captain Metz, and Lon Clark played Adolf Hitler. The Mysterious Traveler is written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, and original music is played by Henry Silvern. The entire production is under the direction of Jock McGregor. Listen next week to a tale titled Murder Goes Free. Another tale of the Mysterious Traveler. The Mysterious Traveler is presented by WOR Mutual. This is Mutual.
traveler. This is the mysterious traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, and it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable. If you can. Where are we going? Well, we're going to join Walter Cabot as he takes a little excursion into crime. Like all the stories, murder goes free. Late one foggy evening, several years ago, as I was walking along one of the main streets of a large city, I was stopped by an elderly man who seemed unusually agitated.
Pardon me, sir. May I speak with you for a moment?
Of course. Here, perhaps this will help.
Oh, please. It isn't money I want. I just want someone to listen to me. No one is interested in seeing justice done. No one.
Well, I should be glad to hear what you have to say.
You will listen to my story?
Yes.
I want to confess something that's on my conscience. I've confessed 100 times, no, 1,000 times. Yet no one will believe me. You must help me make them believe. It all began that day in my office when Martin, my son, came in to see me.
Hello, Dad. How are you?
Oh, Martin. I'm glad you're here. I want to talk to you.
Oh? Sounds as if I've done something you don't approve of, Dad.
Did you read the gossip column in this morning's Daily Ledger?
Oh, no, Dad.
Why haven't you told me about this woman, Diana Winters?
Well, I'm sorry, Dad. I just didn't think it was important.
You've always told me about your other friends. Are you ashamed of Diana Winters?
No, of course not. Why should I be?
Martin, you know as well as I do that her reputation is, well, spectacular, to put it kindly.
Well, stories about her all lies. That's
I'm not taken in by gossip, Martin. I happen to know that this Winters woman is just plain no good.
Dad, I won't have you talking about her like that.
Martin, you don't love this woman, do you?
Yes, I do.
Martin, you must give her up.
Dad, I'm old enough to make my own decision.
Can't you see what she's doing to you? She's just a predatory gold-digging...
Dad, stop talking about her like that.
All right, son. That's the way you feel about it. You'd better go.
All right. Goodbye, Dad.
Oh, Martin. My son. Oh, perhaps that's... Come in. Oh, it's you, Norman.
Hello, Walter. What's the matter with Martin? Just passed him in the reception room. He appeared to be quite upset.
We've had a quarrel.
Oh?
It's the first one we've ever had.
Was it about that bit of gossip in this morning's Daily Ledger?
Yes. Imagine Martin's name linked with that of a...
Martin will be all right. He'll get over it.
No, he won't. I can't stand by and watch him ruin his life. I've got to do something.
I wouldn't if I were you, Walter. You've got to let Martin make his own decisions. He's no child.
You're a fool, Norman. You expect me to watch the only person who means anything to me get hurt?
No, I suppose you won't. What are you going to do?
I'm going to have a talk with that woman, Diana Winters.
Hello.
Oh, good evening. Are you Miss Winters?
Yes. Won't you come in?
Thank you. My name is Walter Cabot.
Oh, Walter Cabot. I see.
And I have a word in private with you.
Really, I have guests.
Yes, it'll only take a few minutes.
Well, all right. Come this way.
Thank you.
No, I'll bother us from here.
I hardly know how to begin, Miss Winters.
And let's be frank, Mr. Cabot, and save ourselves time. You've come here to ask me to give up your son, haven't you?
Yes.
Well, then you may as well know that you're wasting your time. I love Martin, and I won't give him up.
I know better. Since we're being so frank, I'll get to the point. How much do you want to let Martin go?
Are you insinuating what
Oh, now, come, Miss Winters. There's no need to put on an act for me. How much?
Really, Mr. Cabot, you know, you're far more interesting than your son. Shall we say, $100,000?
$100,000?
Yes, $100,000. You love your son. Surely he's worth it.
I haven't anything like that amount of money.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you believe for a moment that Martin has any money?
Oh, no. But he will inherit $250,000 from his mother's estate in a few months.
Oh, so you know about that? Yes, of course. What other reason would you have for leading Martin on?
None that I can think of.
What if I were to tell Martin of our conversation?
He wouldn't believe you.
You can't do this to him.
I'm afraid I must be getting back to my guest, Mr. Cabot.
Now, wait, please. Please listen to me. Martin is everything I have. If I had the money, I'd gladly give it to you. But I haven't it.
Oh, so sorry.
Women like you don't deserve to live.
Will you please leave at once?
If you don't give Martin up, I'll kill you.
Oh, get out of here. I'll have my friend throw you out.
I'm warning you. Stay away from Martin, or I'll kill you. Come in.
Dad, Diana told me you tried to bribe her to give me up. Is that true?
Yes, Martin, it is.
You did that after I told you I loved you?
Yes, because I know she doesn't love you.
And why weren't you able to buy her off?
Because she wanted $100,000.
You're lying. She never asked you for 1 cent.
Have you ever known me to lie to you?
Dad, I told you I was fully capable of making my own decisions, and I meant it. An hour ago, I asked Diana to marry me, and she accepted.
You're going to marry her?
Yes, just a few days.
So you're going to ruin your life for a cheap gold digger?
Dad, I told you not to speak about her like that. You feel differently. Diane and I will be happy to see you. Get out.
Get out, do you hear?
All right, I will.
After all these years and everything I've tried to do for him.
Well, Walter, were you able to do anything
with him? No. I'm not going to let him ruin his life, do you hear?
But what can you do?
If there's no bride, there can be no wedding.
If there's no bride? Walter, you don't mean you...
Why not? You think of anyone who deserves less to live?
You're mad.
For years, my hobby has been the study of famous murders. I've studied hundreds of cases closely. In each case, I was able to pick out the flaw that prevented it from being a perfect crime. And then one day, I began to work out a perfect crime for myself.
Walter, what are you saying?
I was merely doing it for fun, just as some men do crossword puzzles. But Norman, I did hit upon a way to commit a perfect murder. Now I have a motive.
You must stop talking like that, Walter. There's no such thing as a perfect crime.
You're wrong, Norman. And I'm going to prove it.
Walter, can't you see that what you want to do is insane? It's far better that Martin marry that woman than for you to become a murderer.
No. If Martin were to marry that woman, it would be the end for both of us. At least this way I can be certain that his life won't be ruined. And that's all that counts. As for the police, Norman, they'll never catch me. Never.
Pardon me, sir. Can you tell me the name of this horrible place?
There ain't nothing horrible about Valley Springs, stranger. 1,242 people think it's mighty fine village.
I've never seen an uglier place. What do people live here for?
Been drinking, haven't you? Well, I'm warning you, mister. You'd better stop insulting this village or I'll run you in. I'm the village constable.
Oh, so you're going to get rough. I will take this.
Hey, I'll learn you to push the law around. You're under arrest for drunkenness and disorderly conduct. You and me are going to see George Hutchins, Justice of Peace. After insulting our village half a dozen times, Your Honor, he attempted to attack me. And that's when I arrested him.
Did right, Pete. What you got to say to the charges, Mr. What's your name?
I'm not gonna tell it.
He sure had a jug full, Your Honor.
Charge is drunkenness, disorderly conduct. How do you plead, stranger?
Guilty, Your Honor, guilty.
Well, stranger, seeing you admit your guilt, I'll only... find you $20.
Well, if I don't want to pay?
Well, I'm afraid in that case, you just spend the night in jail.
I won't be intimidated. I'm not going to pay my fine, and you can't make me.
Oh, dear. Pete, looks like you'll have to lock him up tonight. Take him away.
Well, stranger, now you can see what the inside of our jail looks like. It still ain't too late to pay your fine. Don't you want to pay it and sleep in a nice, soft bed?
No, I like it here. Which of the two cells is mine?
Well, you take the one on the right. I'll sleep in the other. I got to guard you. Go ahead, get in so I can lock the door.
Just as you say, Constable.
Now, I don't want to hear anything out here till morning. I'll have enough trouble sleeping in here without you bothering me.
I'll be so quiet, Constable, you won't even know I'm here. Good dream.
Would be perfect for my plan. Now, if only the door doesn't creak as I open it. Softly, softly. He's waking up. He's going back to sleep. There, I'm out. Now to get to the car and drive to the city for the most important part of the plan.
Perhaps if I turn on the lights, Miss Winters.
You?
Yes, Martin's father.
What do you mean by breaking into my apartment? What do you want?
What do I want? You remember what I said to you the other night?
What you said? No,
I... Then I'll refresh your memory. I said I'd kill you if you didn't give Martin up.
You wouldn't dare.
Oh, but I would.
Oh, my friends, would you threaten me? Get the chair.
I don't think I will, Miss Winters.
Why are you laughing at me like that? You're just trying to frighten me, aren't you?
I tried to reason with you, but you wouldn't listen. You should have.
No, you can't kill me. Stay away from me. Stay away from me, you hear?
It's no use trying the door. I locked it when I came in, and I have the key.
Please. Please listen to me. I'll do anything you want. I'll give Martin up. I'll go away.
You had your chance. You wouldn't take it.
No. Don't keep away. Don't touch me. I'm free!
Just turn her wristwatch back to 12 and stop it. The exact time I was being arrested in Valley Spring, and my son is free. Free!
Hey, Constable. Constable, wake up. I want another drink. Wake up, will you? Wake up.
What's all this noise about? Oh, my back. Hey, what's the idea waking me up? Why, it ain't even dawn yet.
I want another drink, and I'll take it straight.
Oh, go sleep, you hear? It's 4 o'clock, and you ain't getting out of here until late in the morning. You got 4 hours yet. I don't want to hear any more out of you.
Just as you say, Constable, anything to oblige a gentleman.
4 hours more. Good. Now I've established the fact that the constable spoke to me at 4 o'clock in the morning in my cell, and that I was very drunk. Oh, the perfect crime. Everything's worked out exactly as I planned. The police will never be able to prove a thing. In a few months, the murder will just be a thing of the past. And Martin and I will once more be as close as ever.
Come in. Oh, hello, Kelly. Well, how's the DA's office this morning?
Well, so I finally caught up with you.
My partner told me a few minutes ago that you've been looking for me.
What's on your mind? That's putting it mildly. There's been a 5-state alarm out for you for the past 24 hours.
What?
Where have you been the last few days?
I've been vacationing at a small resort 100 miles upstate.
Kind of sudden vacation, wasn't it?
What?
Even your partner didn't know where you were.
Well, I went there on the spur of the moment.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yes.
And where were you on the night of the 22nd? The night Diana Winters was murdered.
Say, I read about that, Kelly. That's rather an unusual...
Stop stalling. Where were you?
Frankly, Kelly, I don't recall where I was that night. I'm afraid I was a little drunk.
You're going to have to do better than that for the DA.
Oh? Well, I'm afraid I won't be able to. I really can't remember where I was that night.
Cabot, I think you're going to wind up in a place you're not going to like. In the chair. Get your hat. We're going down to headquarters.
Ah, that sounds serious. Well, look, do you mind if I speak to my partner and explain matters to him?
That won't be necessary. He'll be able to read all about it in the papers. And believe me, it isn't going to make pleasant reading.
A dozen witnesses have testified that the defendant, Walter Cabot, threatened to kill Diana Winters. And how has the defense replied to the charges of the state? It hasn't. Can we accept the flimsy story of the defendant? That he was drunk the night of the murder and hasn't any recollection of his actions? Perhaps Walter Cabot doesn't know where he was that night, but I do. He was in the apartment of Diana Winters, where he cold-bloodedly strangled her, as he vowed to do, before a dozen witnesses. There is only one verdict you can render. Guilty of murder in the first degree. The state rests, Your Honor.
Since you've insisted on defending yourself, are you ready for the defense's summation, Mr. Cabot?
Your Honor, I've often observed the strange twists of fate by which a man is saved or condemned. My inability to recall any of my actions on the night of the 22nd left me without a defense. Yesterday, frankly, I regarded my case as being hopeless. Today, however, through a twist of fate, I've received a new lease on life. I'm now prepared to prove my whereabouts on the night in question. I should like to call upon a witness for the defense.
You have the court's permission.
Thank you, Your Honor. I wish to call Peter Wilk to the stand.
Peter Wilk to the stand.
Here I am.
Raise your right hand, please. You solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
State your name and occupation, please.
Peter Wilk. I'm constable for the village of Valley Springs.
Mr. Wilk, will you tell the jury exactly what you told me this morning?
Well, yesterday, George Hutchins, he's our justice of the peace, and myself were looking at a city newspaper. And in it, we see a picture of a man, Mr. Cabot, right on the front page. It says he's being tried for a murder committed on the night of January 22nd. Well, George and me recognizes him right away as the fellow we locked up in our jail that night on a drunken and disorderly charge.
Good to see you again after all these months.
Oh, Dad, can you ever forgive me for having run away when you needed me?
Forgive you? There's nothing to forgive, son.
Dad, I know now how right you were about Diana.
Oh, you don't know how happy it makes me to hear you say that, son. I've been through a great deal lately, but it doesn't matter now that I have you back.
Oh, Dad, I'm glad to be back. I promise you I'll never let you down again.
Oh, hello, Kelly. Come in, have a seat. It's been quite some time since I've seen you.
Yes, yes.
Last time you were here, you put the cuffs on me for the Winters murder.
Well, mistakes will happen.
Anything on your mind, Kelly?
No, nothing special. Just friendly call.
Oh. Well, thanks for dropping in, Kelly.
Oh, by the way, have you seen the latest edition?
Why, no. Anything of interest happen?
Yeah, you might find it interesting. It could mean a client for you.
Oh, really? What's happened?
Well, here's the late paper. Read it for yourself.
Oh, thanks. New suspect tells of Winters' murder. Oh, no. Oh, it can't be.
Why not? If you didn't kill Diana Winters, someone did. And we've got that someone down at headquarters.
But you must be mistaken. What evidence have you got?
Evidence?
Yes.
Oh, well, we can prove the guy we've got was at Diana Winter's apartment that night.
What's that?
But he was seen leaving just after midnight, after a whale of a quarrel with her.
Quarrel? What about?
Oh, useful thing. We both know what Diana was. Two-timing gold digger.
Yes, of course.
She had plenty other boyfriends than your son. Only none of them knew about the others. But
yes,
that night, the guy who killed her found out a few things about her and bumped her off.
No. I don't believe it.
I told you he left right after midnight, didn't I?
That's right.
Well, her watch was found on the floor where she dropped it during that fatal struggle. Stopped just at 12. And that watch is going to hang the guy. We may have been wrong in your case, but this time we have the right man, and we'll make it stick. Even though the evidence is circumstantial. Well, I'd better be running along. Good night.
And I
keep the paper. You might want to read the whole story.
New suspect held for Winter's murder. District attorney uncovers apparently conclusive evidence of guilt. How can it be? I had it planned perfectly so that no one could be held for it.
There's no such thing as a perfect crime, Walter. The murderer always overlooks something.
No such thing as the perfect crime. Murderer always overlooks something. Norman said that. But I knew better. And now an innocent man has been arrested for my crime. Whoever he is, he's innocent. I must save him. Yes. I can't let him die.
Gentlemen of the jury, you have reached a verdict. You have found the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree. Silence in the courtroom.
No. No, no, it can't be. You're wrong.
Silence in the courtroom. I'll have it cleared. Mr. Cabot, you'll kindly refrain from such outbursts.
But, Your Honor, I protest. The evidence submitted by the state was purely circumstantial. There was no real...
May I remind Mr. Cabot that this case may be appealed. Your attorney is quite uncalled for.
But the prisoner is innocent, Your Honor. You haven't any right to...
Another such outburst, Mr. Cabot, and I'll hold you for contempt of court.
Your Honor, the defendant was convicted on purely circumstantial evidence. But I have positive proof of his innocence.
Why did you wait until after the jury rendered a verdict to make this statement?
I hoped, Your Honor, that the defendant would be acquitted and I wouldn't have to reveal my proof of his innocence, but I would like to do so now.
Yeah, this is highly irregular, Mr. Cabot. But since the jury has already rendered its verdict and cannot be influenced, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I know for a certainty that the defendant is not guilty of the murder of Diana Winters. For it was I who committed the crime.
Silence in the courtroom. Mr. Cabot, you say you confessed the murder of Diana Winters?
Yes, Your Honor. I and I alone am responsible for her death. You must believe me.
Mr. Cabot, only 3 months ago you were acquitted of the murder of Diana Winters. You well know that a man may be tried only once for a crime. This confession now can do you no harm. The court sees your confession as being motivated only by your desire to see the defendant go free.
No, no, Your Honor, that isn't true. I did murder Diana Winters. Then I broke her watch and I set it back to 12 o'clock. You must believe me, you must.
Bailiff, have Mr. Cabot escorted from this courtroom. Prisoner will remain in his cell.
No, 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 wait, Your Honor. Listen to me. He isn't guilty. I am. I'm the one who...
That day in court, I've confessed 1,000 times, and yet no one will believe me. No one. But you, sir, you will help me, won't you? We can't let an innocent man die for a murder I committed.
No, of course not, but I hardly see how
Every minute that passes brings him closer to the end. We must save him. We must. If you only help
Hello, Cabot.
Oh, Kelly, I was just telling this gentleman here my story. We can't let an innocent man go to the electric chair. Kelly, you're a smart man. You believe I murdered Diana Winters, don't you?
Yes, I do.
You do? Then you'll help me save him?
People wouldn't believe me any more than they do you.
But they would, Kelly. They would.
Why should they believe your story? You can't be tried again for the murder of Diana Winters. And what man in your position wouldn't confess? to save his own son.
But he's innocent, Kelly. Martin, my son is innocent. He was convicted only because he was near her apartment that night. And now there's so little time to do anything. The execution is set for midnight, and it's almost... It's 12 already. No. No.
I'm sorry, Cabot. It's all right.
My son. My son.
Mysterious traveler again. Did you enjoy our little trip? Too bad about poor Walter Cabot, wasn't it? Such a brilliant man. But his own intrigue sent the one person he loved to the electric chair. As the city hall clock tolled midnight, Walter Cabot must have heard his partner's warning. There is no such thing as a perfect crime. The murderer always overlooks something. So, if by any chance you're contemplating murder, I suggest that you stop and think it over. Lest you'll find to your sorrow that you... Oh, you're getting off here. I'm sorry. But perhaps we'll meet again soon.
I just heard chapter 67, the final chapter of this series of The Mysterious Traveler, Tales of the Strange and Terrifying. In tonight's story, Murder Goes Free, Ed Latimer played Walter Cabot, Tony Barrett played Martin, and Irene Winston played Diana. The Mysterious Traveler is written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, and original music is played by Henry Silverne. The entire production is under the direction of Jock McGregor. Traveler is presented from our New York studios. This concludes the present series of The Mysterious Traveler. Next Saturday evening at 9:30 Eastern Wartime over most of these stations, Mutual will present a new program, radio's first nationwide audience participation mystery series. It's called Calling All Detectives. We invite you to be with us for Calling All Detectives next Saturday night at 9:30 Eastern Wartime. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
And that's this week's Mutual Presents feature. The Mutual Audio Network brings the best of old-time radio and modern audio theater to the world. Be sure to subscribe through the Mutual Audio Network podcast feed, any of our podcast days, or the Mutual YouTube channel, which includes MadCon and many other extra features and shows. See you all next time at Mutual Presents. Good night. Thank you for listening to Sunday Showcase on the Mutual Audio Network. We invite you to continue the amazing audio tomorrow on Mutual with the Monday Matinee, our weekly series of dramatic, theatrical, classic, eclectic, and live radio dramas. You can subscribe to the full Mutual Audio Network feed every day for the world's largest curated collection of audio drama, or find the Monday Matinee feed in your favorite podcast players. See you tomorrow at the matinee, and thanks so much for listening.
The Mutual Audio Drama Network, where we listen and imagine together.